Welcome into the Pokes Report Podcast. Zach Lancaster here alongside Brian Murphy.
Hello.
We are together again.
Hello.
We're in person.
Yay.
Yeah.
And closer than ever.
Literally.
Literally.
We wouldn't be closer if we were in a vehicle together.
True.
I would like to say that it is my wife's birthday today. So,
and a very happy birthday to her.
And that's what I was taking care of on my lunch break. I got some, I got a cake.
Nice.
And some balloons, and yeah, we're going to have lasagna for dinner tonight.
Nice.
I'm pretty jazzed up about
it. Are we talking Stouffer's, or are we talking making it yourself?
We're making it.
Oh.
We're making
it,
yeah.
I love me Stouffer's, man. Like, just the frozen, and you throw it in there. We actually had that two nights ago, and I love it.
If you like frozen lasagna, let me put
I like frozen Stouffer's lasagna, so... If you're about to blow my mind with something other than Stouffer's.
Let me put you on to something here.
All right.
I can't remember exactly, so I've got to pull up my Walmart app.
So good that you can't remember it. Love it. That sounds pretty good so far.
It's a green box, I'll tell you that. Let's see. Frozen foods. It's a white and green box, and it is called...
We're narrowing in.
Michelangelo's.
It sounds very...
I'll show you the box.
Very
professional. You've probably seen it.
It's Michelangelo's, two separate. Names or two separate words.
It is really
okay.
Good. It is really, really good.
Okay.
But if you like frozen lasagna,
I like frozen Stouffer's lasagna.
Try Michelangelo's.
I will give Michelangelo's a try.
10 out of 10.
Okay.
Won't regret.
This podcast was not promoted by
I wish it was. Could you imagine? Oh man. Just unlimited lasagna. Woof.
Us and Garfield would like that.
Hey man.
Were you a Garfield guy?
Oh yeah, I hate Mondays. Love lasagna, hate Mondays.
I just hate mornings.
I'll tell you what I don't really care
hate
for.
Last Saturday.
Vanilla play calling. Inability to run the ball.
We like vanilla ice cream over vanilla play calling.
I'm more of a homemade vanilla or a French vanilla,
okay.
Which is
I can do vanilla bean.
I like a good vanilla bean.
Vanilla bean.
Unfortunately, we didn't even get vanilla bean.
Man.
You know? It was really disappointing. And I'll say this. I've had people, well, there's been worse games. And I would agree, okay? There have been worse games, but not from an expectation standpoint, right? 2022 against Kansas State, one of the worst games I've ever seen in person. Injuries, you're playing third and fourth string, you're playing your third string quarterback and not by choice. You know, you can go back to the 0-10-1 days and you can go back to the days when Oklahoma State was playing for a paycheck, right? Michigan, Florida, stuff like that. When you're talking All-Americans – when you're talking experienced offensive line, you're talking an improved Alan Bowman, Doak Walker Award winner, you're talking a solid defense, and I got no complaints about the defense, okay? I'll just throw that out there now.
Right.
Based on expectations, that was the worst offensive performance I've seen.
Well, it was, but it was also coupled on the fact that we had already kind of seen a disappointing half or three quarters of football against Arkansas. And
correct.
Then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you go to Tulsa, man, you roll. You look great at Tulsa, 5 touchdowns for Bowman.
Yeah.
You're rolling. And then you come back out and just – and it was like the opening drive was weird. The first 3 plays were weird. They were – I think you were off the field in like 38 seconds. And they were rushed
I
and
sat
not
next
close.
To McLean Baxley in the press box, and he goes, what do you think the first play is going to be? What do you think they're going to draw?
Everybody goes, up the middle.
I said it's going to be a handoff up the middle for a 2-yard loss. And I think they were gracious with the spot. Ollie was able to battle his way back for it. It was like a no
game. He slipped. But
he looked at me and he was just like, what the hell? And I was like,
listen, man. Yeah.
Now, to be fair, had he made the proper cut, it would have been a touchdown.
That's what – and I think Robert has a big article about – maybe not just that play, but I think he was spreading the blame.
Yeah. Now, if ifs and nuts, you know, and all that, all that fun stuff, but it, still, I mean, it's beside the point. It didn't happen.
Ultimately, it did not. It did not. Yeah. And that was the frustrating thing. I'm sure I feel for Robert having to take calls. After weeks like this,
what a bozo.
And and then, but you know, the producer has to listen to it as well. My goodness.
Well,
but you guys are growing your angel wings.
There
this week.
Is something called listening and active listening.
Our wives tell us about it all the time.
I'm listening, but am I hearing? We'll fine. I don't know.
Well, that's kind of something that I kind of wanted to address, like, for this podcast in the recap.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go through what the fans' reactions are.
Sure.
And then what maybe the reality of it, because I think some of them are legitimate.
Yeah.
We already touched on the vanilla play calling. We'll get to it, but some of it is a little off the little over the edge. Like, you're just going to walk upstairs and fire your offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
We'll just go ahead and dive in. Number one, Casey Dunn needs to be fired. You need to walk in after game four, look at the guy who's been running the offense for the past, 4 years?
Yeah.
You know, brought in all these players and just go, yeah, give me the playbook. I'm done with you. I don't think he's going to do that. Obviously, he hasn't. That would have happened. Not going to do that. I think you'd have to rattle off quite a few more of these games for Mike to do anything in season. I don't see that happening, because the reason I say that is what were Alan Bowman's stats? What was he, 11 for something? Let's just say the whole team, actually.
He was 16 to 33 for 206 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks.
And the whole team, Rangel included, is 19 of 44. So,
yeah.
All right, on a normal day, normal passing day where you're not, that's less than 50%.
Yeah.
For the whole team. Our whole team, I believe, is more
43%.
43%. On the year, they're above 60,
yeah.
Above probably 60, close to 65% completion percentage. So, you know, out of 44, that's 27, 28 completions. So add 9 more completions to that for a normal day, and Casey Dunn does not look like as inept as that offense eventually did.
And if you go back, like, was it vanilla? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, I don't know if even Allen could explain how bad he was. It didn't make any sense. And if you look at the drives, vanilla, yes. Opening drive, 3 plays, -5 yards and a punt.
Yeah.
The third drive, 3 plays, 4 yards and a punt. The fourth drive, 3 plays, no yards and a punt. You go to the halftime, right? The first drive of Oklahoma State's third quarter, 3 plays, 5 yards, and a punt. Now, 6 plays, 30 yards, that's a little bit better, but you punt. 3 and out, 2 yards, and a punt. 3 and out, -5 yards, and a punt. 3 and out, yep. 2 yards, and a punt. Alan Bowman comes back, and that was his 3 and out there. And then the next drive out, throws a pick on the first play. Mm-hmm. Vanilla play calling? Yes. Not the reason the offense failed. There were some frustrations, and I think there were decisions made that were frustrating. Robert came around to it today and said, you know what, I didn't think I would say this, but I would have left Bowman in, right?
Oh, now, yeah. It was a one-score game. It was a 7-point game. It's not like it was –
you're down
10-3. It wasn't 22-3.
Yeah.
If you make that choice, that change when you're down 22-3, I get it.
Absolutely.
I think everybody in the stadium gets it.
Yeah. My beef, my complaint is you didn't pull Rangel earlier.
Sure, yeah.
You left him in for 6 drives.
Well,
and he was – I talked to Jordan Woodruff yesterday while I was covering for Robert after the – or before Mike Gundy's press conference.
Right.
And he goes, I don't know if – there's 2 decisions that I don't know about with the mentality of it. You know, do you wait long enough at halftime and say right before you're going out, Garrett, you're in? One, that gives him no time to think. That gives him no time to freak out. That gives him no time to panic. Okay, I guess I'm going to play. And then you go out there. But I think they did detrimental damage. And I haven't talked to Garrett, obviously. But the kid has to have no confidence. Because as a backup quarterback, you don't expect to play. And especially in a Mike Gundy offense. And I say that. Mike Gundy doesn't call the plays. Okay, I'll just throw that out there first. But in a Mike Gundy offense, go back and count the number of times you've seen a backup quarterback in replacement of a starting quarterback, not based on an injury. And it doesn't
not
happen.
Often. Mm-mm.
We came up with maybe 3 times since 2011 or 2010, and that includes Alex Cate, Brandon Wheaton. Mm-hmm. There have not been many times. And so Garrett didn't expect to play, but Garrett wants to play. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's been here for 3 years. You want to play, and all of a sudden you get your chance, and you go out there and 3 and out. He was awful.
Yeah.
I haven't seen worse quarterback play, and I hate that for Garrett.
Well, and to all the kind of the next thing was put in floors. Well, that's the next fan reaction.
That's what we talked about.
Of, well, okay, Garrett's not doing it, so put in the third string.
Yeah.
Garrett, Zane hasn't run with the ones since August.
Yeah.
You know, and he's been throwing to – he's been throwing passes to guys that if you're listening to this podcast, you probably don't even know their names, you know, off the top of your head. Like, mm-hmm. maybe some guys after practice, you know, if they want some extra work. But my guess is at this point in the season, they're not doing too much extra work. It's 100 degrees out all week. And from our seats across the field, I can see the whole sideline. Zane was sitting on a equipment chest for most of the game. Unless the offense was on, he'd come out and look, and then boom, back over there too. He's not on headsets listening to the coaches talk. He's not on the phone talking, you know, upstairs. He's not talking to Rete on the sideline. I mean, you know, other than, hey, man, what's going on? But so Zane was not ready to go out there. And not that he wasn't ready to go play. The guy could – I'm sure you could just, hey, put a helmet on him and go out there. He wasn't set up for success. And that would have been, again, like you just said, detrimental to his future, detrimental to – the fans' love of him. You know, I mean, right now there was, and I couldn't really tell, we could tell the students were chanting something when on Rangel's last drive. They were chanting something, and I don't know if it was "We want Zane, we want Bowman." Couldn't tell what it was. They were chanting. It definitely wasn't "Ali, Ali, Ali" like they do, which is pretty cool. But you've got to, I wouldn't be shocked if Zane's getting a few more reps now. Because, and we hate to say this about a kid, you hate to just, like, write somebody off. You hate to, I think it would be an uphill climb to get, to get back on the field, barring a first quarter injury coming up, you know, to Bowman at Kent State.
I think what we saw on Saturday proved that you're probably not going to see Garrett back out on the field, barring an injury.
Yeah.
If Bowman goes out there and just really stinks it up, I think, and go back to 2019, right? Or 2018, when you have Spencer Sanders, right? Even when Corn was struggling, you never saw Spencer.
Right.
You're not going to see Zane. You might not see him take a single snap all year long.
Well, and honestly, I hate that, because regardless of what happens the rest of the regular season, next spring you're either giving him the keys or you're not.
Yeah.
And I feel like we need to see that. And not that they owe that to the fans, but if you want a bunch of NIL money coming into your future quarterback, make him show him on the field.
Well, I will say this. The good thing is all the games that we've seen Alan Bowman play, going back to when he was a freshman in college 15 years ago, you don't see many performances like that.
Correct.
I'd be willing to put money on the fact that you're not going to see another performance like that from Alan Bowman. So barring an injury, I don't think you'll need to see another backup quarterback.
No. Hopefully we're up enough on somebody.
Yeah,
You know, run him out there. And I think that, you know, the reason that Garrett went out there, and I bet the reason he got so many drives, that's not what they saw in practice.
No,
what they, you know, all in fall camp when they're running scrimmages, and I'm going to guess that Garrett ran the offense just fine in practice.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, that was probably a shock not only to Garrett, but to Dunn, to Gundy, to Bowman, to everybody. I'm sure when Bowman saw, okay, Garrett's going to go in, if you'd have put the truth serum in him right there, he'd have gone, man, we're gonna go score a few times.
Yeah.
You know, and, I mean, he was putting some mustard on some of those. Well, that one that Shetron caught over the middle, that thing was a missile.
Yeah, he was humming
So Garrett has, he's got the arm for it. He just doesn't have the experience. And, you know, so I think that's where Zane definitely doesn't. That's where they're not going to a third quarterback right there. Number three, very bland play calling, and that is on Casey Dunn. That is where I think all the fans are correct. Anybody who watched that game went, what the heck was that? There was a drive, and I think Gundy referred to it, where he was going into the mom analogy of, you know, should have just run those 6-7 plays again because they hadn't stopped it. There was a drive where, yes, you all of a sudden start getting the ball outside of the tackle boxes. And the wildest thing to me is that you have a Brennan Presley in the slot. You keep running that deal where he comes to the quarterback and then runs back out. That play has worked for multiple touchdowns if you dump it back to him.
Yeah.
There's no way people are covering it that fast. and not leaving something else open going the other way. Because it didn't seem like they used Ollie as much of a as a decoy this last game. They've talked about that. Okay, when Ollie goes this way, everybody goes, well, then run some naked bootlegs. Run that, run those plays that we've seen before where you're getting the quarterback moving. I bet Bowman could run some of the Spencer Sanders pass plays where you got Spencer on the move. I bet Bowman could run that. Run them.
Yeah.
You know, I know you haven't thrown that play sheet away. So
you got them somewhere.
So run it. And then it boggles my mind that running between the tackles is the only option right now. Or was the other night. Absolutely boggles my mind that some coach doesn't get on there and go, Casey, is this thing working?
You know, and I will say, I'm not going to put all of that, not all of it, I'm not going to put all of that on Casey. Because at some point, you have to start laying blame on Ollie. Because you go back to last year, Ollie knows how to make cuts. He's physically capable on making a cut. Now, a handoff up the middle,
tough cut,
up the middle. Like that is that's tricky, but Ollie's vision right now is not good. Because if you go back and you rewatch that first play, he had 6 or 7 yards that if he makes a simple cut, he's probably going to score a touchdown. There was no one that was expecting that. And so you can lay some blame on the offensive line. It's crazy how much they've regressed in terms of run block. I think you got to put a lot of blame on Ollie. He is big and he is physical. He is frustrated. And so what Ollie wants to do is, I'm going to run up the middle. I'm going to bowl you over. I'm going to work for this and I'm going to get it. And it's not going to work.
Well, and you just touched on it. Ollie's big. Ollie is a big guy. You're not going to hide Ollie back there.
No.
When Ollie's 6'3", when he starts going left, everybody knows he's going left.
Yeah.
When he starts, makes one cut and comes back right, everybody sees it. If you've got and we're just about to play DJ Giddens for Kansas State, he's a littler guy. He's not a big guy. He can hide behind those 6'4", 6'5", offensive linemen. And when he makes a cut, you don't exactly see it, on a snap. Ollie isn't – they're not doing anything, I don't feel. And this is the same discussion that we had about right before or right after Iowa State last year. It's the exact same one.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is Joel Klatt tweeted about OU was having the same issues and has all year with their run game, with their pass game, just their whole offense is brutal. But that he's talking about their RPO system, how it's just not creating holes. It's not giving setting the running back up for success. The RPO system is a modern-day version, supposed to be a modern-day version of the triple option, where they pass, not hand off up the middle, quarterback can keep it, or quarterback pitches it. It incorporates a pass option as well. And by all accounts, Bowman is really good at deciding whether to hand it off or whether to pass it. But the third option there of Bowman keeping it, which is what made Spencer Sanders run this offense better, run it better early in his the middle part of his career, I guess, is that option was there. They have to dedicate people to that. Well, right now, if we pull the tight end and the right tackle to go into a power, you've just signaled to everybody in the world, we're running a run to the left. We're running this way. They're collapsing on it hardcore. There's no backup plan. There's no secondary plan there. And I think that's the stuff that, after Iowa State, that's the stuff that now, that's where I'm saying, they got to just, you got to take your run game, get everybody in the room. These are guys who have coached for 30, 40 years. They've run multiple systems. Mm-hmm. By saying, hey, we're going to go back into whatever it is, they'll figure that out.
Well, and I think you and I, we've joked about it. I know I've joked about it on my show.
This is no joking matter, Zach.
I know, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
But if you go back to last year, 4 games, they figured it out in the 5th game. Ironically enough, it was Kansas State. Manhattan's a tough place to play. And Kansas State, they practice early in the day. They practice kind of mid-morning, early afternoon. So 11 a.m. kick in Manhattan is not going to be difficult for Kansas State. It's a tough environment for OSU to play in. I would be shocked if you saw a similar game plan than what you saw at Utah. Now, I'm not saying all that because I think Oklahoma State's going to go in there and win, but after five games, if we see what we saw against Utah on Saturday, I don't think you're going to see a fix. And we talked about it yesterday on the afternoon sports drive. The Utah game was the most important game on the schedule for Oklahoma State. You lose that game, Kansas State becomes even more important. Mm-hmm. You win that game, you're still in the hunt. You yep. lose that game, it's over. You're not going to Arlington. You're just not. And it's a tough situation to get yourself put into, because you have to go into a place where traditionally you haven't had a ton of success. You're playing a team that's going to be really, really pissed off for what they did out in Provo. BYU, I think, is a lot better than people thought. Provo's a tough place to play. It was a, 9:15, 9:20 start time out there. That's a tough thing to do. But you're going to have a team that is going to be chomping at the bit. They got a tough fan base. And you put yourself in a situation where you have to go into probably the worst environment that you could possibly be in for Oklahoma State, and you have to win. Mm-hmm. You cannot lose on Saturday. In the same breath, Kansas State at home against an opponent that has struggled to run the ball, Kansas State has to mm-hmm. win that ball game.
Yeah.
This is going to be this is the most important game for Oklahoma State, and you put yourself in a situation that – if you do what you did on Saturday against Utah, against Kansas State, you'll lose that game, and it won't be 22-19.
No, you're correct. Good Bowman's going to have to show up.
Yeah.
A rejuvenated offensive line's going to have to show up. Holes are going to have to be created, and Ollie's going to have to hit those holes.
Yeah.
And it's going to take – this is one of those – to dig out of this hole, it's going to take a team effort. You can't just put it all on Bowman and go, all right, man, hey, remember all those Texas Tech days? You're back into that. You got to go score every point because, yeah. you know, I don't know that history doesn't exactly tell us that that the coaching staff is just going to abandon the run because, well, we can't really do it. So we're not going to do it. We're just going to go five wide and roll. Sometimes I wish we'd go four wide, right. you know, and they keep talking about the other teams stacking the box. Force them not to.
Yeah.
Go four wide with Ollie back there. Go four wide with Sessie back there, who's a little more scat back. You know, I'm no creative man myself.
Yeah.
But the kind of the last thing, and you touched on it earlier, and I've seen this, that Gundy is calling the plays, and he's the problem. So he's the one that needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Gundy's the one who needs to go because we've had a couple of bad games on offense. Okay, people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this whole Mike Gundy's calling the plays thing has to stop. If anybody has ever seen any other coach ever who is calling the plays, I've never seen one who does one without the big Denny's menu sheet.
At the least, that sheet.
A play card or yeah. something. You know, even Dana Holgorsen, I've never seen him at West Virginia, Houston, just call the plays out there without,
yeah.
you know. But even whenever he did, they're showing him on the camera, and he's barking into the thing. Every time Mike Gundy's ever shown, and I've got a great view from 134, he's 40 yards downfield, looking George Strait on one leg, you yeah. know, just kind of arms crossed and watching
yeah.
and listening to his, and he's said this many times, his job on game days is to listen to the communication. So Mike Gundy's not the – I'm not going to say he's not the problem here, because there is a lot of truth in what he says of – we run the same plays around here that we have forever. And when you do that, now they have gotten creative and run some variations of it that you don't see very often, and so that those are usually successful. We've got to hit into those more. And I think they want to. It sounded like the other day they want to. You just have to force it.
Yeah. It's and I'll say this, the bright spot, you know, and we kind of hit on it a little bit, the defense.
Yes.
You play – and I've heard some people complain, well, look at the yardage they gave up, 456 yards. You held them 22 points.
Yeah. Ultimately, that's what matters.
And to get to that 22 points, they scored more than midway in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And that was I think it was a 45-yard from Keithy. But here's the thing. When you're on the field for – almost 43 minutes. And at that point, they'd been on the field for 36 minutes when they gave that up. But roughly 36 to 38 minutes when they gave that touchdown up. And you held them to 22 points?
36, 38 minutes in 150-degree weather.
Yeah, and I think you only lost a handful of players to IV. And they came back in.
See, and a lot of people in the stands, they go, well, I mean, yeah, it's hot. And it was, man. I was baking in the sun. It's hot. I would love to know, like, because they say down on the field, and I've heard anywhere from 130 to 157, Gundy said, to 160, whatever.
The field temp was 160.
Okay.
Now, at what point cools off when it goes up.
That's what I was going to say. So, are the people down in the first row on each side feeling the ones that, you know, second row? Where does that kind of, because it's not like you had people falling out in the stands.
No, so it wasn't, I mean the literal field itself was 160. And then they were probably, like, I was on the field after the game, and it was, I mean, it was probably 110, 115. Like,
did you get IVs after being on the?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, that's nice.
And, like, in terms of breathable air, was probably 115, you know, 110, 115, which is still miserable. But when you're out there on that 160, even if it's a 40-degree difference where your head is to where your feet is, being out there for 42 and a half minutes – That's unheard of.
Well, for 14 times, Trey Rucker was down in the 160.
Yeah.
14 tackles. You know, yeah. Nick Martin was down there, and I don't remember how many he had, 10, you know, 8 to 10, 12. But they're down in the 160, and then you got to hop back up. And
Nick Martin had 5 tackles.
Only had 5?
Wow. Trey Rucker, 14, Azegbo, 10, Daniel, 7, Corey Black, 6, and Nick Martin, only 5.
Is it still a problem?
Yes.
That our safety leads our team in tackles? Or is he playing up enough closer to the line that...
Both? I think you're looking at... I mean, you would obviously want your linebackers to get it figured out. But I think this... I think it's Rucker playing up, but it's also Rucker being at the ball at all times. Oh, is that squeaky?
I can hear that.
I think that's what it is. I think that it's just him going around to the ball, but I also think that's kind of a bend but don't break type of defense. You know, we're gonna give you some passes, we're gonna give you some yardage. Obviously
80-yard runs.
Obviously you don't want to give up the big runs.
Right.
But it just so happens that Trey Rucker's incredibly fast and he's gonna ball hawk it. And so I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a problem, but I also think that you'll accept that. That's something that you would want. So,
well, I'm certainly don't hate on us having the leading tackler in the nation.
Yeah. Still, which is crazy.
Probably wouldn't mind if we instead had the leading tackles for loss guy in the nation. But really, you know, and I'm not going to say that we don't miss Colin Oliver by any stretch of the imagination, but it hasn't been as big of a drop off as when we heard he was out that it was going to be.
Yeah, when we first heard that Colin was out, like we saw him come out in that boot after halftime, the press box, it was just like, oh man, because it's not everyone in that. Well, I don't want to say everyone because there's some stooge that shows up wearing Oklahoma State gear that sits in the press box credential. Drives me crazy. A large majority of the working media, very non-biased, but. There's two things. One, you want Oklahoma State to succeed because it's good for your business. Mm-hmm. But two, we've all been on this beat long enough that when you see a kid like Colin Oliver, who's been here for 4 or 5 years, I don't know if there is a better kid on this roster, a more likable person. And
Brennan Presley's obviously up there. But,
absolutely.
But yeah.
But you look at a guy like Colin Oliver and you hear that he's going to get injured. Now, he puts on Instagram a couple of days ago, you know, it's not finished or whatever. I would expect him to come back. But it's devastating. And not from a sense of, oh, man, how are you going to replace it? Although that plays a factor, you know, well, who fills that role? Obi Ezekbo has done an incredible job. Mm-hmm. I mean, 10 total tackles. He had 5 of them were solo stops. He had a quarterback hurry, a tackle and a half for loss. Ezekbo has done a really, really good job so far this year. And to kind of give you an idea of how good Oklahoma State's defense was compared to how bad the offense was, and now I understand that time plays a factor, right? Oklahoma State had 83 total tackles compared to 43 for Utah. But that is three and out for Oklahoma State. They had 10 tackles for loss, And that was something that I don't think I expected.
We had 10 tackles for loss, right?
Well, they, like the Oklahoma State defense.
Okay.
Yeah, the OSU defense had 10 tackles for loss. That to me was crazy.
Well, and we were, I don't remember when it was that their quarterback got that insanely long run. That was, I believe, a third down, possibly fourth down. That was definitely a morale breaker because you had, I think you had started to come back or you just kept getting.
That would have been on third and 11, a 48-yard gain early in the third.
What was the score then?
I think that would have. I don't think they'd scored their field goal yet, so it was still 10-3.
So okay, so yes,
because they didn't get that field goal until three. What is that?
Yeah,
almost 3 minutes left in the third.
Yeah,
so that was a 48-yard third and 11. You had third and 11 with 10:24 left to go in the third quarter, and he breaks off a 48-yard run.
If I remember correct, I don't believe that was on a pass play. I think that was basically a zone read. He either keeps it or hands it off. And he kept it and, whoop, yeah. And goes around. And, oh, man, that one hurt. But, yeah, by and large, you take that one out, you take that one out
and you take the busted play for Keithy towards the end of the fourth quarter, that big touchdown pass for Keithy.
Well, I was going to say the we had him, and, again, Gundy talked about it in the post-game and the Monday, that Nick Martin hits the running back in the backfield.
Yeah.
And he goes 70 or 80, whatever it was. And, you take those two out, and the defense, by and large, played well. If Nick Martin makes that tackle, you say the defense played amazing.
Well, let me take you back to even just Friday or Saturday morning. If I tell you that Utah scores 22 points.
Feel great
whether Cam Rising plays or not, Oklahoma State's winning that game.
Yeah.
Utah scores 22 points, Oklahoma State's going to win by at least 10 points.
Yeah.
Period.
Utah, by the way, also did a fantastic job of, is Rising playing? Is he not playing? Is Rising
sends
playing?
Him out there, yeah.
Yeah.
Had him suited the whole game.
Oh, yeah.
Had the
Michael Jackson glove going on.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a lot of time left.
Nope.
I got a show I got to do in about 11 minutes. So
yep.
any final thoughts moving forward or thoughts on Kansas State or really anything?
Yes, change the run offense.
Oh, that's it?
All right.
Perfect.
So let's run through the Big 12 real quick. It's fun.
It's fine. I like it.
Do you want to do that or do you want to do Kansas State?
No, let's do it.
Okay, here's what you need to know about Kansas State. Avery Johnson, pretty good, 60%.
He's all right.
60% completion percentage, so less than Bowman. He's
I'll tell
attackable.
You take out Avery Johnson's run game, you're going to win that game because he's not a good passer.
That's funny, man, because that's what I wrote down. I said you have to force them into long second downs.
Yep.
If you can force them into long second downs, and assume we don't give up 48 yards to Avery on a third and 11.
Ironically enough, if you do what teams have done to Oklahoma State and you stop the run, you probably have a good chance of winning that ball game.
Probably most ball games.
Just to throw that out there.
All right, we got Colorado at UCF.
Oh, man, I don't know how to pick this game. UCF, this is wild to me, at least as of right now, Tuesday at 2:50. UCF is 14.5 points. With it being in Orlando, I'll take UCF.
Yeah.
I don't know if they cover, but I would take UCF to win.
Yep. No, I agree with you. Arizona at Utah. Utah minus 11. It's another kind of big spread.
Yeah, I think
Arizona's they're pretty good.
I think Cam Rising probably plays. And what we saw from Arizona against Kansas State, I would take Utah to win and probably cover.
Give me Arizona in a wild one, high scoring.
Let me tell you this. Arizona finds a way to upset Utah at home. Oklahoma State, back in it, baby.
Back in it.
Let me tell you.
You were going to say something about a burrito.
Let me
tell you.
Liv Moss.
That was one of the great tweets ever.
Liv Moss. Oh,
that's so good.
BYU at Baylor.
BYU.
Wait, didn't they play already this year?
Baylor
was
played.
Was that last year?
I think it was last year. Baylor played Utah so far.
That's what it was.
I'll take BYU.
BYU
They're
on
good.
The road.
They're good.
I'll take Baylor at home. TCU at Kansas. I felt so bad.
Oh,
as
man.
My dad's half of the family is an SMU. My mom's half of the family. All SMU all the time. Dad played football at SMU. I promise you there was not a happier church service than the United Methodist Church right outside SMU campus. I'm sure the wine was a flowing.
Oh, I bet.
You know. So TCU at Kansas.
Yeah, Kansas desperately needs a win.
They somehow are favored.
Not even to keep them in hope for the Big 12, But just a,
just in life.
Just in life. Give me the Jayhawks.
I think TCU figures it out. I'm sorry. Kansas is going to Kansas, and I think they're going to finish near the bottom. Let me rephrase that. We're about to talk about who's going to finish at the bottom. Iowa State at Houston.
Oh, man. Iowa State. I'll take the Cyclones.
Yeah, Cyclones.
I'm not even going to get into the spread.
Nope. Cincinnati at Texas Tech, both 3-1.
Yeah, I'll take – I don't know how to pick this game.
Well, Vegas wouldn't either if it was on a neutral site because you usually get about 3 points at home, and it's a three-point spread.
I guess I would take Tech because they're in Lubbock.
Just for fun, I'll take the Bearcats.
I would like to.
Yeah. I mean, I'll trade you.
I'm typically going to – if it's a pick 'em, I'm typically going to take the home team. And Cincinnati, I haven't been super impressed, but they did really good this past weekend. But I'll take Tech.
All right. Go Bearcats, just to be contrarian and to do that thing you just did. Yeah, rare. All right. That is the Big 12 for this week.
Isn't that weird?
Just
I feel
for
like
fun,
there should be more games.
Just for, we can throw one in there just for fun. How's OU do it at Auburn?
Not well.
Go Tigers.
I would take
different Tigers.
I would take Auburn. Yeah. I think they're pretty pissed off about what happened this past weekend. And I would take Auburn.
Yeah, I don't think Michael Hawkins is a savior.
Listen, if we played Arkansas 9 more times, we're gonna win 9 more. Hugh Freeze is furious. My God. I would take Auburn. I think OU.
By the way, agree that if Oklahoma State played Arkansas 9 more times, we would win 9 more times.
You think so?
Yes.
I don't
with
know.
Vince Young in the first half at quarterback and all.
Now, if they did that, if they doo-dooed the bed in the second half, yeah, I'll take the – now, I wouldn't take 9. I wouldn't take 10 wins for Oklahoma State against Arkansas. Not what I saw on Saturday.
No, that's true.
But I would take at least 6. I would take at least they have a winning record. Give me 6-4 at least.
That works.
I would do that. All right, that's going to do it for the Pokes Report podcast. Appreciate everybody listening. We're going to probably do it again next Tuesday. Depending on
every now and then schedules just get in the way. It is what it is. We tried Tuesday last week. We tried
Wednesday
last
and
week.
Thursday, yeah.
And then Friday. You had something going on that you wouldn't have been able to get it up.
It's a rough week.
Yeah, is what it is, man.
It's a rough week. But we typically we'll be shooting for midweek. But that's going to do it. We'll talk to you next time here on PokesReport.com.